an electric utility sues to block publication of details of a massive data center project. Advocates call on the state to do more to reduce wait times for a healthcare assistance program, and the Trump administration's new import policies could spell trouble for Arkansas cattle ranchers. Those stories and more are coming up this week on the News Wrap from the Arkansas Newsroom. I'm Daniel Breen, news director of Little Rock Public Radio. Each week, we're recapping the top stories from all across the natural state. We'll unpack the headlines, share exclusive insights, and provide the context you need to fully grasp the issues that matter most to Arkansans. That's this week on the Arkansas News Wrap, coming up right after the news from NPR. This is the Arkansas News Wrap. I'm Daniel Breen with Little Rock Public Radio. Two Arkansas news outlets found themselves the target of a lawsuit from an electric utility earlier this week over documents the utility says are trade secrets. Joining me to talk about it is Byron Tate, managing editor of the Arkansas Times, which was one of the publications sued by Entergy Arkansas this week. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Daniel.
So for background, Byron, can you give us a little bit of context on this story? This is all stemming from a massive data center project that's currently in the works in West Memphis. Tell us a little bit about that project and sort of who the main players in this story are.
That is a data center, a 600 megawatt, you know, the numbers just keep climbing. And, you know, those numbers, that is how much electricity those things require. And so Entergy has kept a lot of that information secret. And it's with the blessing of the Public Service Commission, because these are trade secrets, they say, and letting this out would harm their ability to attract other customers. So along comes Jessica Kibble. And she is a mom. She has a two-year-old, and she is an x-ray tech. And she is very active in trying to figure out the relationship between Entergy and these companies. And so she has filed a lot of FOI requests, not just about Entergy, but Central Arkansas Water. She is a machine. So she got back a bunch of information on three thumb drives, actually, from the Public Service Commission. And in those documents were things that Entergy did not want to get out. There were things that the Public Service Commission did not mean to give her. And so I think she thought she had shared those with the Arkansas Times. I did not see evidence that she shared that with me. She sent that to the Democrat Gazette. They promptly published it, despite some warnings from Entergy not to do so. So that information gets out there, and Entergy, as we put it in a headline, blew a fuse, and they wanted that stopped. So they went to federal court, asked for a temporary restraining order to keep the Democrat Gazette from further reporting. And actually in that document, they wanted that the Democrat Gazette to take that story down. Well, it had already been published at this point, published in print, published online. And my name was on there, the Arkansas Times was named. I think that was a fishing expedition. I'm not sure what they hoped to get out of me or our situation, but we're sort of non-players other than having a front row seat because I was a defendant.
These documents are specifically about Entergy Arkansas's relationship to Google, or at least a front company for Google who's building this data center. What exactly was in these documents that Entergy does not want out there?
One of the things in there was how much Google was going to be paying. You know, they have said that Google's going to be paying the whole freight for this thing. The numbers show that they're going to be paying a third. I think Entergy is going to quibble about the interpretation of that number. Many interpretations, I'm sure, of that, but that was one of the things that they were upset about, was how much that Google was actually going to pay for a solar array that would, the electricity from which will offset how much the 600 megawatt data center will need. So the solar farm is actually in Jefferson County, and it's going to create 600 megawatts. So
in general, I guess, what protections do journalists have, or how do these sort of challenges go?
What they were trying to have to take place would be called prior restraint. It is the objection to disseminating information before it's been disseminated. I believe Judge Radofsky, the federal judge, called it the essence of censorship. he was quoting another jurist from years ago, but he said, I agree with that. It is a very, very high standard, stopping the publication of information. So if you had information about troop movements, something like that, you probably would reach that bar. But this did not come close. The judge said, as Entergy was itemizing the things that it said were trade secrets, he said, you make some good points here. Some of these things that you identified probably are trade secrets. However, that does not trump crushing the First Amendment. Now, on the other side of that, the judge did not give the Democrats out a blank check for doing this. There might be repercussions. They could get sued for damages. So, I mean, that's to be determined, I guess. Kind of goes back to Act 851 of 2023. Cities and counties can't bar these things. They can't ban these things. So it leaves the door open for these sometimes small city councils and quorum courts, justices of the peace that maybe have not had to deal with anything more complex than how much gravel we're going to put on our county roads. And suddenly they're dealing with multi-billion-dollar companies and their high-powered attorneys. It's an unfair playing field.
You mentioned comments from U.S. District Judge Lee Radofsky, who is overseeing the case. How did Radofsky rule, and what are the next legal steps in this case?
To say this was a practice game, that's not a very good analogy. But, you know, a temporary restraining order is a hurry, hurry, hurry situation. The house is on fire. We need a restraining order to stop it. He did not grant that. That's not appealable. And the next step is to go to a preliminary injunction phase. And so that is where, see, he didn't complain. He just said, none of us know a lot about this case. Because like we were talking earlier, you know, I went to work Tuesday morning, and by Tuesday afternoon, by 4 o'clock, I was sitting in a federal courtroom. You know, I didn't know that we were all going to get hauled into court. So this temporary restraining order, he said no to that. But the next phase gives these attorneys a little more time to bake their case, to look at legal precedent, to make their arguments. And he kind of left it up to the attorneys on both sides to figure out when that's going to be. It could come pretty fast because that TRO, as they call it, the temporary restraining order, it expires in a couple of weeks, I think, even if it had been put in place, right, which it wasn't. So they will have a hearing at some point, and they will present arguments for why they think their case is correct. And the judge said, you know, just because I've ruled this way on this temporary restraining order doesn't mean I won't change my mind. And had he approved it, he said, you know, the same would have been true. I might have, you know, at the preliminary injunction phase, I might have rescinded it and not let you do that. I will say that Jessica Kibble, he denied the TRO for us, for the Democratic Gazette. He also denied it for Jessica Kibble. She gave back the thumb drives during court. She did not know she was going to get dragged into court, you know, and it bothered her greatly. But he let her off the hook, at least at this TRO stage.
That's Byron Tate, managing editor of the Arkansas Times, talking about Entergy Arkansas's lawsuit naming them, the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and a private citizen seeking to block disclosure of details on an upcoming Google data center project. Thanks, Byron.
Thank you, Dan.
Arkansas farmers are dealing with a variety of issues, from higher input costs to strains due to new federal trade policies. Craighead County Extension agent Brandon Thiessy spoke with KASU's Lexi Burns about how President Donald Trump's decision to allow 660 million pounds of foreign beef to be imported into the U.S. could affect Arkansas cattle producers.
Now, recently, Trump did announce that his administration will allow a large amount of foreign beef to be imported into the U.S. without triggering higher tariffs. Can you kind of walk us through why he wanted to do this?
Sure. You know, a few years back, a lot of the producers had to sell off cattle to drastically reduce the cattle herds in the United States. And with those low numbers and the higher demand, the price for their product, has risen. And I think that this is an attempt to try to lower those costs to the consumer by allowing more imports in with little to no tariff on them.
And how could bringing more foreign beef into the U.S. affect prices for Arkansas cattle producers to receive their cattle?
The whole crux of the matter is that all of our pricing of what we pay for beef is based on our cattle herds. And so by increasing those a little bit, hopefully you'll lower the price that the consumers pay. But it's a double-edged sword because our producers are having to charge more for their beef because of their input costs, as well as not having the cattle inventory that they have, but their input costs such as fertilizer, feed, diesel fuel, and all the inputs that normally associated with the livestock industry are much higher than they have been in the past. They can't afford the price to go down too low because of what their input costs are going to have, and they're trying to decide now whether to try to increase their herds or keep them the same, or so they're kind of caught in a catch 22, I guess, right now.
I've heard that the beef that is going to be brought into the U.S. is coming from Argentina, and beef there has an issue with hand, foot, and mouth disease. Do you think that could impact herds here in Arkansas?
Well, I hope not. I hope that it's inspected to the point that if there is problems with that, it will be not allowed to come in. And, as for Mexico, that's where the old world screw worm is started showing up. And, we certainly don't need that in our livestock either.
Do you think farmers are going to start rebuilding their herd to try and compete with the foreign beef?
Well, I think that they don't know what to do right now because of this. If this hadn't happened, I think there would have been a movement to try to increase their herds. But I don't know. This is really kind of throwing a monkey wrench into the whole operation. And we import beef anyway, and this just adds it makes it come up to about 11%, I believe, is the number that this will bring it up to. And like I said, it just brings a lot some uncertainty that with the producers that they'll have to decide what they're going to do.
And there are some industry groups here in America who argue that imports could discourage producers from expanding their herds. What do you think that would look like for Arkansas's cattle industry over the next several years?
Well, if we don't expand our herd, we'll continue to pay these, higher beef prices. And because smaller herds means, less product, and, demand for locally grown beef is at an all-time high now. Consumers are getting more educated, and they prefer to buy, if not just from U.S., but locally owned, locally grown beef, grass-fed, that kind of stuff. So it's hard to say really what's going to happen. But at this time, if the prices start to come down that's paid for their product, it's really kind of hard to expand your herd with the prices being lower.
Now, speaking of people wanting more local beef, how much of an impact could this policy have on smaller or independent cattle producers compared with much larger operations?
The smaller operations like that, they're more regional. I mean, like Northeast Arkansas, for instance, and there are several, grass-fed beef operations in Northeast Arkansas that have quality beef, and they have quite a following of people that will buy only their stuff. They don't even go to the store and get beef anymore. Maybe not so much on them. I would think what would really be their issue is, again, all these input costs that are so high right now. If we could do something to bring down the fertilizer costs and the fuel costs and things like that, it would make a big difference. But that's going to involve ending this war that we're in right now, I'm afraid. And I don't see that happening anytime soon.
That was Craighead County Extension Agent Brandon Thiessy speaking with KASU's Lexi Burns. Parents and families are calling on the state of Arkansas to do more to reduce wait times for a healthcare assistance program. KUAF's Matthew Moore has this report.
Paige McCammon is a mother of two in Morrilton. She describes her oldest son, Cord, as a typical three-year-old.
He wanted a lot of my life, just all around boy, you know, into dirt, into playtime, wrestling, all those things.
Her youngest son, Turner, is just 15 months younger than Cord. She says she and her husband noticed pretty quickly that something was different about Turner.
It took me about 18 months of fighting, and he was finally 18 months old when we got the genetic results back.
Turner was diagnosed with an extraordinarily rare neurological disorder called DHDDS. McCammon says he is just the third person on the planet to have the variant of DHDDS that he has.
So he is literally like a one in a billion little boy.
Turner experiences dozens of seizures a day and needs constant monitoring. One tool that could provide the McCammon family some needed support is an epilepsy camera for nighttime monitoring. One way their family could access that is through a program called Community and Employment Services Waivers, or CES. But the problem is, even though McCammon's family qualifies for these waivers, the funding is not there right now. So she's on the wait list.
My child is number 2,084, and we're looking at about a decade-long wait list.
In addition to providing medical equipment, like that epilepsy monitor or mobility equipment or feeding tubes, CES waivers can also pay for staffing for in-home care for families who need someone from outside the household. John Newman is the executive director of Lifestyles, a developmental disability support agency based in Fayetteville. He says one issue he has seen is simply a lack of information about the CES waivers for families who qualify for them.
One problem that we have in the state of Arkansas is just information sharing. A lot of families do not know the time it takes to get a CES waiver. A lot of families don't know that a CES waiver exists that have children with developmental disabilities. And so one of the concerns that we have as providers is not only getting that information out, but a lot of families call us when they feel that they are in crisis. And so, you know, sadly, a lot of our phone calls entail telling that family what the steps are, how long it's going to take, you know, when they were looking for an answer that day.
That was McCammon's experience.
When I found out about the waiver, I actually sadly found out of it in a very hard time in my life where I thought it was my lifeline, genuinely. And that's kind of where my advocacy started, because I knew that my family, this was a great need. This waiver was literally the make it or break it, you know, for our family. And that is the same way for so many other families out there as well.
She began to share on social media. There are posts dating back to April of McCammon sharing photos of Turner with captions like, "Turner is not safe waiting on the CES waiver." She also shared stories of other families with similar experiences being on a decade-long wait list for necessary care. She wrote to Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders' office explaining the need for urgent care, even telling her that institutional placement or foster care may need to be considered for Turner in order to receive the medical care he needs. McCammon described the response from the governor's office as cold and like a template response. In early August, McCammon got to speak to a group of state legislators about Turner's experience and the CES waiver wait list.
I started out in the beginning more so coming to them on an emotional side, which was great. It got them to see the real story of it. But I noticed after a while, after talking to them, they were, most were kind. They were honest, though there wasn't much they could do. And they would ask me, you know, straight up, what is your solution?
Nicole Clowney is a Democratic state representative for District 21, covering parts of Fayetteville. She says she first heard McCammon's story on social media and was struck by the fact that her two-year-old son could be waiting for help until he was 12. Clowney says when she thinks about a solution to the wait list, it's not easy.
But it is simple. The government's job is to take care of people. Our government is failing to take care of the people who need our help the most. Paige's story is heartbreaking, but as you said, it's not unique. One of the things that I worry about is that as a state government, sometimes we make choices that disproportionately negatively impact people that don't have the time and resources to fight for themselves.
Do you have an idea at all, ballpark, how much it would cost to clear the waiver waitlist right now?
I've heard figures anywhere between $30 and $50 million. That obviously is a huge amount of money, but what I really want people to understand is that it is an amount of money that the state government does in fact have. Just to put it in perspective, again, we're hearing somewhere between $30 and $50 million to clear that wait list. We spend $380 million annually on school vouchers. In other words, on money that we know disproportionately is being spent on families who already sent their kids to private school to continue doing so. If we made better, more compassionate, smarter choices for Arkansans, this waitlist could be cleared immediately and it could stay that way.
So what happens when you actually get off the waitlist and get to use your CES waiver? That is managed by the provider-led Arkansas Shared Saving Entity Program, or PASS. Four different insurance companies take public money and use it to provide privatized managed care to the intellectually and developmentally disabled Arkansans who benefit from this service. Clowney says there is a lot of oversight and accountability for the recipients.
There is not accountability for these passes, for these middlemen who are theoretically responsible for coordinating care. That, to me, feels like a huge problem.
She says a program like PASS and its failings should not be an excuse for the government to continue to reduce funding.
That does not mean farm out the work of the government to a private insurance company who has no incentive to provide services for beneficiaries. Those insurance companies' business model are based on giving as few services as possible to the folks that it's meant to serve. That's not going to work. We can't use that then as evidence that the government doesn't work.
On Friday, August 28th, McCammon's husband Seth received a call from Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders' office. McCammon says the governor told her there is not an immediate fix to the CES waiver waitlist and that ending the waitlist will require action during the next legislative session. But that's not the only option. Governor Sanders has the authority to call an extraordinary session, something she has done three different times since taking office in 2023. Now, McCammon is leveraging her advocacy on social media to ask supporters to join her in directly asking Governor Sanders and members of the state legislature to call for a special session to eliminate the current waitlist. Clowney says she is fully in support of calling a special session.
Absolutely. Whatever we can do to help these families, I am in support of. We have called special sessions to over the last few years. We have called multiple special sessions to lower tax rates to provide very minimal tax relief to the average Arkansan. This would be so much more impactful and is certainly extraordinary to call for an extraordinary session.
Ozarks at Large sent several emails and called Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders' office for comment on this story and an invitation for an interview. Her spokesperson did not answer any of our messages.
That was KUAF's Matthew Moore reporting. You can hear the full story online at KUAF.com. And that's it for this week. The Arkansas News Wrap is brought to you by the Arkansas Newsroom, a collaboration between KUAF in Fayetteville, KASU in Jonesboro, and Little Rock Public Radio. You can find this week's episode online at littlerockpublicradio.org. Until next time, I'm Daniel Breen, and this is the Arkansas News Wrap.